A helicopter arrives, kicking up a cloud of dust in Camp Bastion. Its passengers alive because of his fellow soldiers on the ground and a team of medics, nurses, doctors, and pilots. As the medical emergency response team touches down, a crew of fire section stretcher bearers run forward to carefully move the injured soldier from the helicopter's loading ramp to a field ambulance. The whole process only takes a matter of minutes before the casualty wrapped in a dust blanket is wheeled into the Roll 3 hospital and handed over to the emergency department. In Afghanistan, the speed of movement from the battlefield to this hospital is crucial to the injured soldier's survival. When an incident happens, it's the closest soldier that reacts with immediate first aid. They're the ones who apply the tourniquets and field dressings, but it's the medic on the ground that keeps the patient alive and comfortable until MERT arrives. Private Ian Barrowman's part of Brigade Ops Company 1 Scots and a medic attached to 3 Medical Regiment. He'd returned from patrol at a forward operating base when I caught up with him.
Basically just gone out on the ground with the guys, just in direct support of them, staying with them on the ground and stuff, and just providing medical cover if anything goes wrong. Luckily I've not had to deal with much, just a couple of IED incidents, so one vehicle-borne IED and one victim-operated IED, but luckily the guys that we were working with were pretty fortunate not to take many casualties this tour. They're pretty switched on out on the ground.
What's it like when you're on the ground and an incident actually happens?
Oh, it depends what it is. Two incidents that I've dealt with. You would train that intensively as a medic. You know, you've got that many tests from PDT and you've got Role 1 validation in that as a medic. You kind of just go into muscle memory. You know, the two times that I've had to deal with anything really, you don't really think. It's just, you just react, basically. You know, you just go straight into your sequences and it just flows. And you've got guys there that, some guys that have had previous tour experience that have dealt with casualties and that as well and dealt with different scenarios and stuff and situations, so they're there on hand. They've, as I say, they've done it all before, so they're good backup for you, especially some of the guys that I worked with. In one of the incidents, one of the guys that had a few tours under his belt dealt with stuff on previous Herricks and that, and it just makes it easier when you've got guys around you with great experience and great training.
Unlike a paramedic in the UK, you're going to actually know the people that you're dealing with. That must make it so much more difficult.
It can make it difficult if you're attached to the guys, if you're embedded with them for a number of years or stuff. Even, you know, staying with them in a CP, PB, or just in the compound here in Bastion, you know, you're eating, sleeping, doing fizz with the guys and that, especially if it's your, like, for me, your local battalion, you get close to a few of the guys and stuff. So it can be pretty difficult, but it's where your level of professionalism's got to come into it and just switch off to that fact. Your main priority is the treatment of the casualty, so...
When you're dealing with a casualty, you've got the best trauma centre in the world just a call away, and MERT will arrive really quickly. When MERT arrives, you see the helicopter coming over the horizon. What do you do then?
Before that's came in, you know, you've got a wheels down time, you know, how long it's going to take the MERT to come in. So you're just sitting with your casualty, just continually checking him over, making sure he's all right. Just covering him up, obviously, for the dust and stuff, keeping him nice and safe. And then you're just stood by. The commander's already set out a desert box and stuff for the helicopter to land in, and just rough edge guys come off the back of the MERT and then they just signal you got on with the casualty.
Security must be a concern as the helicopter's landing, because by the very nature of where you are, there's been an incident that's happened there.
It's massive. Like 9 out of 10 times the Apaches will come with the MERT and that anyway. They come and you've got massive force protection on the ground. You know, you've got your small team that's working with you and the casualty, so they're protecting the care of the casualty in the bigger picture as well. Watching their arcs, making sure that MERT safe to land.
When the helicopter lands, do you hand straight over to the doctor?
Pretty much. You might have a hand on the stretcher, you might run on it at the back. Casualty gets laid down, guys bug off and you try and hand over a mist, which is pretty difficult in amidst the noise and stuff like that, but just hand it over, point out the main parts and that, and it's over in less than a minute. You know, you're on, casualty's down, mist's over and you're back off and the MERT's away.
What sort of emotions are going through you when this is all happening?
I don't know. The only thing that you really think about is 100% care of the casualty, giving them the best treatment that you can give out. Just focusing 100% on that. And it's not until really after it that you, I wouldn't say adrenaline or stuff, but it starts to soak in exactly what's just happened and stuff. You start digesting it, you start thinking about it. You know, you doubt yourself sometimes in that as well. Could I have done this right? Could I have done that better? You know, did I do that properly? Why did I not do that? Or did, you know? That's when you start being very analytical after it and stuff. So emotion-wise, you can get really a bit of self-doubt in yourself after it, you know, just a bit of paranoia, basically, in case you've not gave the casualty the best of treatment. It's not for the faint-hearted as well. know what I mean?
When the call comes in to recover a casualty from the battlefield, it's the medical emergency response team that rush to a Chinook helicopter. In effect, the Chinook is an emergency room in the sky, and the speed of Mert's reaction is crucial to the soldier's survival. Flight Lieutenant Matthew Back is officer commanding Mert. I met him on the lowered rear ramp of a Chinook, equipped and waiting for the next call.
I was a nurse before I joined the Air Force. I've been nursing for 11 years now, and I've always really enjoyed emergency care. I enjoy the high tempo, and that you never know what exactly you're going to get.
Now, your ambulance and your hospital is a helicopter. We're standing at the moment inside a Chinook helicopter. This is what you deploy forward with. Could you talk me around it a bit?
Yes, of course. The Chinook, it's huge. It's the biggest helicopter that the UK have, which gives us a lot of space. It is bigger than generally an ambulance you'd get back in the UK, but we have the strength that we can carry a lot more than the one casualty that the ambulance services. So up the front of the helicopter is the pilots and the gunners. We have quite significant weapons to protect us on the side of the helicopters, and it has got some good armor on it as well to look after us. Up the front, we have the medical assets, so myself, the doctor, and the two paramedics where we sit, and we will generally receive our patients. Down the back, we also have RAF regiments, gunners who look after us as well and look after the aircraft when we're on the ground. Then there's a loadie on the rear as well who's keeping an eye out what's going on at the back.
Obviously, you're going to have to treat some pretty horrific injuries when the casualty comes on board. What sort of assets do you have here?
One of the main things that we carry now and has been developed over the year is blood. We carry two boxes of blood, which is kept below 4 degrees and can be kept there even in the middle of summer for 24 hours. It's an amazing piece of kit, and that's really, really good for getting the blood straight into that patient and getting them back.
That's a recent advancement as well, isn't it?
Over the last couple of years, yes. It was quite a complicated chain to be able to get UK blood safely over here, keeping it cool and making sure the freshest blood comes to our casualties.
What sort of emotions do you go through when the alarm goes off and you know you're going to meet a casualty?
Well, the adrenaline kicks in straight away. Occasionally we get a shout and then we get stood down and the adrenaline is still rushing through your body. You come very focused very quickly. I personally will start thinking ahead of what do I need to get ready? How are my team? Are we all there? If it's everybody in the zone, and what do we need to do? As we get into the helicopter, we don't actually know what we're going out to get. So it could be anything from one mild casualty to a whole group of quite seriously injured individuals. But it keeps us on our toes.
When you're flying there, what's the atmosphere like inside the helicopter? Is it very businesslike, or are you just focusing on what it's going to be like when you get there?
It's very professional. We practice our drills regularly to make sure that we are up to standard. We have a very set way how we as a team work together and sets the airframe up ready to receive patients.
How closely do you work with the pilots? Because obviously they're an integral part of the team as well.
As the flight nurse, I actually wear a flying helmet and I have direct communication with the flight team. I try not to disturb them very much. They do an amazing job flying quite dangerous areas, usually at very low level. But I would speak to them and they would give me feedback how far away we are from the casualty, if there's any danger in the area, or if there's the change in the situation.
When you're getting to the area where the incident has happened, what's going through your mind at that point? Because you don't know exactly what you're going into. Obviously, something traumatic has happened. It's going to be dangerous when you land. What goes through your mind then?
The danger doesn't really come into it. All I'm concentrating on in my head is the casualty. What's going on outside the aircraft, the pilots look after, and I have such a high regard for them that we know they will look after us. And so I can just solely concentrate on what's going to come aboard and react quickly and appropriately.
And you have protection on board, you have people here looking after your safety when you're on the ground. So the tail has gone down, how do you get out and how do you get to the casualty?
Our paramedics will go off the back of the helicopter. They will approach the medic on the ground or where the casualty is on the ground, and they will go and assess them. They're looked after permanently by one of our force protection personnel, and then they will feed back to us what we've got and what's going to come aboard.
How important is that first response to the survival of the casualty?
What I always say is it's not MERT who save the lives. It's the soldiers on the ground doing that immediate first aid. They do an amazing job. They are the one who saves their friends and saves their colleagues. Getting the tourniquets on, getting the dressings on, giving the pain relief, they are amazing.
What would you say the most important thing is once you get to the casualty? Is it continuing the treatment, or is it speed of getting them back to the hospital at Camp Bastion?
For us, because unfortunately we're still quite a large target, our first thing is speed of getting them onto the helicopter and out of here. We are a stopgap, we're an emergency department, but we are still limited in what we can do. We have a lot of constraints because of noise and vibration. The quicker we can get them back into that proper hospital safe environment, the better.
One of the concerns, obviously, in an environment like this is the amount of dust. The moment the helicopter lands, it kicks up an almighty amount of dust, almost like a dust storm when it lands. How do you protect the casualty from that getting into the wounds?
On the ground, they have blankets that they use just to cover them over. But actually, on the helicopter, we use a blizzard blanket. And it has two effects of keeping the dust away, but it's also a warming blanket. It's very important to keep injured personnel warm because it helps with the healing process. So we have a big foil double blanket, which actually has chemical heating pads in them as well. And they are absolutely fantastic to keeping them both covered from dust and from any cold. Even during the height of summer, our casualties still get cold.
Once the casualty's back on the helicopter, what happens then? Does the doctor immediately start treatment or continue treatment?
Most of the time it's continue treatment from what's happened. We literally, as soon as that patient's down, we're straight onto them. The doctors are all consultants, vastly experienced, and they will assess the airway very quickly and decide if that patient actually needs to be put to sleep and put on the ventilator immediately.
The moment the casualty's on board, how soon do you let the guys know back at the hospital what they're expecting?
As soon as we lift off, the doctor does the initial assessment, and then usually within a couple of minutes, we have a very good idea of what we're lifting on. So I would discuss that with the doctor, and then that gets fed back from the air crew back to the hospital to know exactly what's coming in and what to expect. We will have ambulances waiting for us. We also have the RAF Fire Service waiting for us as well, and the US Marine Fire Service to come and support us. The patients will be offloaded straight into the battlefield ambulances and straight into the hospital. The whole process takes 3 or 4 minutes.
The amount of adrenaline that must be running through the whole team at that point must be something quite extraordinary. How do you wind down after an experience like that?
We support each other very, very well. We're a very close-knit team. And also we do a debrief after every single lift. So we will sit down and we run through a process of talking about what was good, what maybe wasn't so good, what we need to improve in the future. Was there any equipment issues? Was there any communication issues? And we make this a formal process to make sure that any problems have been recorded and are fed back.
And after the tour, once you get back to the UK, what do you tell your family and friends about what you've been doing out here?
It is hard. I think it's hard for anyone who's not been out here to really understand what we've seen out here. But we use our family for our normal support mechanism rather than, we don't tell them what we've done, but we know that they're there and they understand what we're doing. When it comes to actually talking about what we've done, I personally have a very good connection with some of my military personnel who I can talk to. And if there are problems, there is processes to follow. We also have a formal day that everyone who has deployed will get together. And it's a way of reflecting on the work that we have done and also just to let our hair down a little bit and enjoy ourselves.
The job satisfaction must be amazing.
It is. It is absolutely amazing. It's exciting and you can really see the people on the ground and us making a difference to this person who's been injured.
When the helicopter lands back at Camp Bastion, fire section stretcher bearers carry the patient to a field ambulance, which drives a short distance to the Roll 3 hospital. It's a massive complex of single-story buildings and green tents linked by a maze of corridors. There's a covered breezeway leading to a set of double doors, and it's here that the patient's handed over to the emergency team. Just inside those doors, the emergency department looks like a casualty unit in a major UK hospital, with several bays set aside to receive personnel directly from the battlefield. Corporal Cornwell's an ED nurse at Camp Bastion. During her shift, she talked me through the patient's arrival procedure.
We're in Trauma Bay 1, which is where the major traumas will come into and all the equipment and things are ready to go in case we get a trauma.
Just out through that door is where the helicopter landing area is, where MERT will arrive with the patient. What happens then?
Ambulance will pull up on the breezeway. Patient will be sanitised by the front of house and whoever's in charge of the ED department will go and do a quick triage and carry out any life-saving intervention as they're being brought into the trauma bay.
Who's there to meet the patient when they first come through those doors?
It'll be an ED nurse. The trauma team will already be here and everyone will have their own roles that they're put into the trauma team and be ready and waiting to put a cannula in, give blood if necessary, and then there'll be a doctor that's actually leading the overall trauma itself. So everyone will be having their own roles and getting on with the job that they've been designated to do.
What sort of equipment do you have here?
We have the Belmont, which is the rapid infuser, so that can give blood 250 mils within 30 seconds. There's also, we have the ventilator in case the patient needs to be intubated and be put on a ventilator to help their breathing. We have suction, pumps, obviously life-saving drugs. The surgeons are also on standby if needed, so we've got pneumatic tourniquets if needed. The patient can go straight into theatre at some times. They'll do a right turn straight into theatre if the team leader thinks that's necessary.
Do you find with the advancements that have been made, things like blood transfusions with MERT, do you find that stabilises the patient when they arrive here?
Yeah, MERT really packaged their patients really well. We've had a couple of patients that have been so well packaged that they've gone straight to theatre, so bypassed ED.
One thing to point out is for someone who hasn't been here, the hospital is very large and you also have a section of the hospital that would look after the sort of things that you'd have for a walk-in clinic. So someone appearing there won't affect the doctors and the nurses that are working in this section.
No, we've got primary health care, which is open during daylight hours. Any time after that, then they'll come to ED. So not only do we deal with trauma, but we also deal with run-of-the-mill, everyday things, medical problems as well. Like currently, we've had quite a few patients having MIs on this tour. So not only do we deal with trauma, but we also deal with medical and surgical emergencies as well.
The medics on the ground would have been the first person to the scene, and they would have applied things like tourniquets. And the speed then of getting MERT out and arriving at the hospital, that must be very important.
It is important because the guys on the ground have all given that life-saving intervention. They've put the tourniquet on, they've done other things, put FFDs on and things like that. And then they've got nine liner here, so we kind of have an idea of what we're expecting so we can prepare for that.
And the nine liner is the report that they would send in ahead of the casualty?
The nine liner. So that once we get the nine liner, we have an idea of what type of casualty we're going to receive, so we can start preparing for that and get equipment and people that we think we might need for that particular case. If it's a casualty, as in a critical care casualty, then normally they're C-casted back within 12 hours. From here or from theatre, they'll go to the intensive care unit where they'll continue the care that they need and also get them ready for C-cast and within 12 hours.
The very nature of your job or the very nature of this particular section means that you'll see some pretty traumatic things. How do the team deal with that?
After traumas, we have a team debrief where everyone has an opportunity to talk about what's happened, and if anyone has been particularly affected by anything, then the team leader and OC and the 2IC are really supportive. For myself, I feel like if I had a problem that I wanted to talk about, then I could go and talk to them about it. But normally as a team, we'll sit down and debrief when we get the first opportunity to do so.
After you finished in theatre here, where do you go back to?
I will be going back to my civilian job in the NHS in A&E.
Do you find that working out here and seeing the sort of injuries and dealing with the sort of trauma that you see, does that affect the way you do your job in the UK?
I don't think so. I think it probably makes you a better person, as being out here can make you appreciate things back at home and appreciate that life is precious. So it probably makes you a better person and a better nurse.
As well as treating battlefield injuries, the hospital also looks after the military and civilian workers in Camp Bastion. If someone needs treatment in the UK, it's CCAST, the Critical Care Air Support Team, who look after that patient. Before they fly, there's a separate area for these patients, and the deployed Aeromed Squadron OC, Wing Commander Leslie Adcock, showed me around her ward.
This is the Aeromed Staging Unit. We can actually go up to 10 beds, but we've only got 6 at the moment, and it's used for patients that are going back to the UK on maybe a strategic flight in the evening. It's usually quite late, so we can either move patients to here from the main ward, which means we're not disturbing the rest of the ward when we're moving in the middle of the night, and we have patients from primary health care that come into here from their accommodation in Lines, and they'll lie here and bed down until the flight goes early hours of the morning.
Will they always be accompanied by a medic on the flight back?
We have teams of a nurse and a medic on every Aeromed, and depending on the patient load, we could add another nurse or another medic to that team.
So it could be anyone in theatre who has an injury or maybe an ongoing condition that needs treatment in the UK?
Absolutely, and you can imagine we're looking after a fit population who like to do phys. They sprain ankles, they hurt their backs. Our disease non-battle injury patients are actually outweighing our battle injuries, which is good. It means people aren't getting injured out on the ground.
Can you tell me what today has been like for you?
Well, normally we come in the morning, we do the ward round, so we see all the patients in the hospital. Then we go to board round, discuss their care and their disposal, as in, are they going back to UK or are they locals, and we move them from places like Kabul. And then we'll go back to the office, we'll work out our patient movement request, which is the paperwork we have to put to request the aircraft. We identify the escorts that are going with the patients, and then we decide patients and go and collect them and put them on the aircraft.
We quite often hear that it can be as short as 24 hours between receiving an injury on the battlefield and being cared for back in the UK. The logistics behind that must be amazing.
It is, but part of our remit is that we attend ED for all the CAT A's, UK patients. If the DMD, Deployed Medical Director, says to us, we need a CCAST, I then leave the ED with as much patient information as possible. I ring Bryce Norton and say, we need a CCAST, we'll send you more information on the patient as soon as we can, and they will start looking for aircraft and get the critical care team stood up in the UK.
What was your background before you moved into this field?
I've been a nurse for 33 years and I'm a trauma orthopaedic nurse, and my job in the UK is to run the military ward in Birmingham. So it's quite useful having that knowledge and coming out here.
One of the things that, speaking to all the members who are involved in the care of the patients, when you say to them what's the best thing about your job, they all say the people I work with. Is that something you'd agree with?
Yes. We are a very small branch, the Princess Mary's Royal Air Force Nursing Service, so we all know each other, and that makes life very much easier on ops because we can almost think for each other in the end, which is good.
When the military aircraft arrives at Camp Bastion, it's the critical care air support team who fly with the patient back to the UK. Flight Lieutenant Ainsley Kennett is the officer commanding CCAST.
We are tasked with looking after patients that require a higher level of support whilst in flight, such as patients requiring a ventilator for their breathing or blood pressure support. We also do specialist monitoring as well for head injured patients, and we carry blood with us during our flights as well if the patient requires it.
If a patient needs to get back to the UK and needs to get there quickly, what's the process that you go through?
There's a team that's based at Bry's 24/7. They will be informed of the patient and a team stood up. They have a kind of a 6-hour window to get ready to come out, and then we look at the available airframes that could carry a patient on, which will leave Bry's. The team that's out here currently, they will prep the patient, make sure that we've got everything that they will require, such as blood, drugs, etc., and then we will meet the team, make sure everything's set up, get them onto our monitoring, onto our infusions. There'll be a handover here, and that's where we take control of the patient. From that point, then we will go back up to the flight line and return to the UK by whatever aircraft is available to us. We don't have a specific aircraft for ourselves.
More than an ambulance in the sky, you're an intensive care unit in the sky. What does it look like inside the aircraft once it's been fitted for you to work?
Depending on the aircraft, C-17, we have stretcher fits that we set up depending on the number of patients that we have. And on the TriStar, we have a permanent fit. We try and make it as kind of as ITU laid out as we can. It depends, and also on lighting, etc. It really is kind of an intensive care unit in the sky. It's amazing what we can do up there.
Who are the people who make up CCAST?
So we're made up of one consultant anaesthetist. There'll be two nurses, both ITU qualified. We'll have a medic with us and a technician who's there to look after the kit as well. We're all regulars, but we also work in the NHS to maintain our clinical skills, and that's kind of anywhere in the UK.
What do your colleagues who work purely in the NHS think about the role that you've got?
I think that they find it quite intriguing. It's great string to the bow, so to speak, to have this extra experience. I think that they can see the demands of it as well, because although we work in the NHS, we're called away quite often to do different courses, but I think a lot of them would like to at least come along and see the process.
Flying out of an operational theatre, of course, has its own complications, and I imagine that makes it even more complicated if you have a patient, say, with a head injury, because flying at high altitude, that must be tricky.
It can be. It does have its challenges. We do try and get them as stable as we can before we fly, and say if we're flying out from the UK, we'll assess the patient to make sure that they're still fit to fly. We don't want to run the risk of putting them at more danger by moving them if they're not ready at that time. But also, we're aware that they need to get back to the UK for specialist treatment, so if we can take them, we will take them.
Will you always land back at Bry's Norton, or will you pick an airport that's closest to the hospital?
We go to Birmingham International if we can, if it's open, or in the Midlands area with the patient. So yeah, we fly directly there. We are met by the ground handlers there. There will be an ambulance waiting for us, or a number of ambulances depending on the patients that we bring back. There'll also be police escort as well, depending on the time of day, to get us through the traffic, because it's still about a 30-minute drive from the airport to the hospital.
At what point does the patient's care hand over to the NHS or the military hospital?
Once we've got them into the unit, the handover then takes place between the doctors, and the nurses will hand over as well. So as soon as we've got them set up on their monitoring, the patient enters into the NHS care system.
10 hours after leaving Afghanistan, the patient arrives here in Birmingham at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. The building in front of me is vast, with towering glass wards and a sweeping roofline. It couldn't contrast more with the hospital back at Camp Bastion. I'm here to meet Squadron Leader Claire Myhill, who's Officer Commanding Communications for the RCDM.
The Royal Centre for Defence Medicine is the primary receiving unit for all casualties who are injured on operations or on exercise throughout the world. So we receive the casualties and then give them the care that they need before either sending them on to Headley Court, should they require it, or back to their local unit.
You're based at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham, a very modern building.
It's an amazing facility. The hospital was opened about 2 years ago, and we've been here ever since. So quite a transformation from the old Selly Oak days.
Of course, you'll be receiving patients from all three services, a very tri-service environment.
Absolutely. We have personnel based at RCDM from all three services. We've got over 400 personnel, both clinical and non-clinical staff. And yes, as you say, it's very, very joint operation.
How is the unit set out within the hospital?
We've got staff embedded throughout the hospital. We've got staff in the emergency department, on various wards, in theatres, and also we have a support unit as well to deliver not just clinical care for patients, but also that administrative aspect and also the welfare.
Historically, British military hospitals around the world have had a very military atmosphere, very different than an NHS hospital. You're based within an NHS hospital here. Do you have that same ethos?
We do within RCDM. I think the fact that we do have a number of personnel here, that makes a huge difference. We do hold quite a big footprint within the hospital, and the fact that we're embedded throughout, we've got that sort of nice spread of staff throughout the hospital.
A lot of expertise from the civilian doctors and surgeons and medics here. Do you call on that often?
To be honest, the military consultants have actually learnt so much from the treatment that we've been delivering to the patients over the last 10 years. And that, combined with the expertise of the civilian colleagues, has meant that we have patients surviving now that just wouldn't have survived 10 years ago. So it really is a partnership. There's been lots of lessons learned with the war that we've been fighting over the last 10 years. And there's been lots of techniques that have been developed. You know, we're sort of rewriting the textbooks with the techniques that we're producing, and that has very much moved into civilian practice. One example is the use of tourniquets, and they're now routinely used in ambulances for civilian patients as well.
Where exactly does RCDM fit within the patient pathway?
The hospital here we term as the Role 4. Patients have been receiving treatment from the point of wounding through Bastion on aircraft back to Birmingham. So we are sort of in the middle of the pathway, if you like. Patients will either go from here onto Headley Court should they require that treatment, and where they will continue with the rehabilitation, which we start here. They will either be discharged or they'll be sent on to their local units to continue that rehab. But there's numerous patients coming back to RCDM now for elective treatments. They will continue to come back for many, many months and years to come.
What's the best part of working here for you?
Definitely the people. I am a dentist by trade, and to be honest, didn't really understand what RCDM did. I've had a fabulous time. I've been here for a year and I've met some inspirational people, both the patients and the staff. You know, the work that's been done here really is truly inspirational. And as I say, there's people now surviving injuries that just wouldn't have happened in the past.
Just down the corridor, I chatted to Flight Sergeant Wanda Hughes. She's one of the first nurses a patient meets when they arrive back in the UK.
We've got various roles. At the minute, I'm a practice development nurse on critical care, looking after the new military patients that come in. We can work alongside the NHS caring for the patients, or we've also got a duty critical care nurse, and then we will liaise with all of the agencies, welfare and everything, and families if any military patients are admitted to critical care.
What happens when they arrive at the emergency department?
They'll come straight on to ITU, and we'll have received the signals and that from theatre. The duty critical care will liaise with the unit. Once they're met, have sorted out beds, there's four units, and then they'll be ready, welfare will have the patients, and then we'll just have a hopefully a smooth transition then into the ITU, and the things that they need will be set up and the surgeons, everything will be ready to review the patients.
How large is the team that will meet the patient?
It'll depend on what's wrong with the patient. If it's an IED or something like that, then there'll be a lot of surgeons. There'll be ophthalmics, plastics, orthopaedics, but we can have other injuries, sort of MIs, there'll be a different sort of group of people will meet them then.
Once the patient's been treated in the ITU department, how important is the speed of treatment to the recovery of the patient?
Extremely important. Their recovery, and that will start as soon as they get to ITU. There'll be physios there, the orthopaedics will be there. We have the duty critical care nurse and the other agencies. We have daily meetings working out the rehab as soon as they've even arrived, sort of what they're going to need, where they're going to live, and if they get back, and the support they'll need. So the sort of rehab starts as soon as they arrive.
What do your colleagues working in the hospital who aren't involved in the military side think of your job?
Sometimes they say it's quite exciting, but can be quite scary as well. But we tend to have quite a lot of presentations and stuff and show them what we're doing so that we're not one minute we're here, next minute we've been away, so we've been in operations and then back again, and it might take us a while to adjust back again because they've been here for the last 4 months, whereas we've sort of been out in Afghanistan and things have changed on the units and stuff whenever we've been away, and it's just trying to get back into it again when we get back.
What's the most important part for you?
It's very rewarding whenever you see them, they're ready to be discharged, and a few months ago you'd have seen them sort of critically ill in ITU, and then now you see the families and they're happy and sort of they're ready to be discharged down to Headley for their further rehab.
Before the casualty even arrives back in the UK, the medical team in Birmingham follow their patient's condition to work out a treatment plan. Lieutenant Commander Deepak Vijayan's a military registrar at Queen Elizabeth Hospital. I caught up with him just after his morning rounds to find out how those preparations are made.
Probably 24 hours before they get here, we would have already received a signal with the operation note. We will then look through that, find out which specialties need to be involved and have them waiting when they arrive so they can be assessed by usually a consultant or definitely a senior registrar so that they can plan the next procedure urgently.
You were saying to me earlier that the goal of the hospital here is if a patient has a leg injury to get that patient walking again, and Headley Court would of course be involved in that process.
Of course, we have a weekly meeting where a representative from Headley comes to the QE. Also, we have a telephone meeting with them that same afternoon. So the longest a patient would go without a plan is 6 days. So within 6 days of arrival here, there would be a rehab plan for him in place. And then his entire medical care or stroke surgical care would then be focused on what Headley require to get the patient as active as possible again.
So if there's a possibility that the patient will need a prosthetic limb, that will be taken into account the moment the patient arrives in theatre?
Yeah, as soon as they arrive here, the orthopaedic surgeons are very good and very experienced and they'll know what's required. So once the patient arrives here, our prime concern is to get the patient mobile again. We always do tissue-sparing operations where we try and keep as much of the tissue viable on the patient so that we can fit the best prosthetic available for the patient. And that would be planned between the orthopaedics, plastic surgeons and Headley Court.
It's a fact that medical advancements seem to progress during a time of conflict. How much have you noticed the treatment and the way that patients arrive changing over the years since Afghanistan?
It's actually changed quite dramatically to the point that, you know, we now have an MRI machine available at Bastion. We get their images already here, so the operations are pre-planned for them. So once they arrive here, we already know what we need to do and we just get on with it.
What's the most rewarding part of the job for you?
It's to see the guys back in clinic and to see how much progress they've made once they've left here. That's the best part.
After surgery, a patient moves on to one of the main wards to recover. Sergeant Sarah Drew's a clinical support nurse on the orthopaedic ward.
We are the main receiving ward for all the AeroMed patients who don't require critical care.
You're a military nurse, but you're working in an NHS ward. What's that like?
It's great because you do learn a lot off each other. It's great to be working alongside the NHS nurses and letting them learn from you and from your experiences as it is from them as well, because they're very experienced in trauma orthopaedics also.
One of the things I'd imagine you'll be doing is meeting the families as well, because it's when they come to your ward that the patient's families will first have contact with the person who's been injured. What's that like?
It can be quite emotional, but obviously you have your sort of professional head on and your main focus is obviously to make sure that patient gets the best care possible, but also that that family is supported and they're involved with the care of the patient, so they know what's happening and they're as informed and as involved with care in the process of rehabilitation as well.
Now, the ongoing process will mean that the patient will more than likely go to somewhere like Headley Court. How soon do you know that that's going to be the case? How soon do the patients find out that they'll be going to Headley Court and when?
Pretty soon. I mean, you get used to the injuries coming in because you do have periods where it tends to be trends, the same injuries. You already have in mind whether they'll be going to Headley Court or not. We have a representative from Headley Court that comes and visits to see the patients when they're weeks away from going to Headley Court, so they tend to come up and visit the patient. So we do tend to know pretty much as soon as they arrive on the ward, you tend to have an idea that they will be going to Headley Court, but obviously it's dependent on their injuries.
Recovery from the injury is one part of the recovery process. Of course, there's the impact that that has on the patient as well. How do you help the patients come to terms with the injuries they've received as a team?
As a team, we have what we class as the military bubble, an amazing sort of system that we've got here at RCDM. And it's a huge multidisciplinary team. It involves military liaison officers, welfare, the Padre mental health team, nurses obviously, you have the doctors, the surgeons. So we all come together very well, and the MLOs are fantastic, as are the welfare and the mental health guys, because they tend to touch base with the patient as soon as they arrive on the ward, and they get involved with the families as well to ensure that they're obviously being looked after. Patients tend to get assessed as well to ensure that they're coping emotionally. Some of the injuries are life-changing to some of these soldiers, so obviously it's not going to be fixed overnight, or for their short stay in hospital it can be a couple of years that they're going to require support. But we do our best by just informing them regularly of what's the plan. They have military registrars that are specifically their doctors for their stay, so every day they have a ward round and they get visited by them to talk about the plan of action to ensure that they're getting all of the care they require. And we also have a duty military nurse every day who also is a liaison between the military registrar and the patient, and also MLO's welfare. So anything they need, the duty military nurse will be on hand to see to their needs emotionally or clinically.
Do you ever get to meet the patients at the end of their recovery process when they've left Headley Court? Do they ever come back and see you?
Yes, they do, yeah, very frequently, because they come back for outpatient clinic. We often get them coming up on the ward, either on their prosthetics, which is really good to see. They'll just come walking in, and last time you saw them, they'll be wheeled out, so it's fantastic to see. Yeah, so they regularly pop up to say hello and see how we are as well, so yeah, that's great.
How does it make you feel when that happens?
Oh, you feel very sort of proud of them, really, about how mentally strong they've been to get through what they've gone through, because you can't obviously imagine what it's like unless you're in that situation. So you're very proud of them, and you have a lot of admiration for the patients. Yeah, for how far they've gone.
Before I left the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, I dropped by Colonel Kevin Beaton's office. He's the commanding officer of the Royal Centre of Defence Medicine, the man who looks after the medics, doctors, nurses, technicians and staff in Birmingham.
Here we have 400 people to oversee the delivery of the package of care, welfare and administrative support that we give to the military patients who come through the unit. It's very much a ringmaster in terms of trying to coordinate it to make sure our patients are well looked after, but also to make sure that our staff are supported in the delivery of that care.
What's an average day like for you?
There is no average day. We get royalty visiting at least every 6 months, senior officers visiting at least every 6 months. We get really rewarding incidences of seeing our patients recover incredibly quickly. But we also get really harrowing incidents of the challenging care that we have to deliver for some of our patients whose outcomes are not as good as we would wish. So it really is a roller coaster of different emotions and activities, with massive peaks and massive troughs. But overall, an incredible privilege to be able to work here and to be involved in looking after our people.
When your team are dealing with those traumatic incidents and those things happen, how are they supported within the hospital?
We firstly are a military unit, and we have any of the support systems that any military unit would have in terms of your immediate chain of command, your colleagues that you work with, and we take particular care in making sure that we look after our people from a psychological perspective. So in the first instance, I'd expect the person's line manager to be responsible for looking after them, as well as their mates and their colleagues. But beyond that, we have our padre, and then we have our own dedicated mental health team who can look after individuals, and then we also have our wider referral service under the sort of military psychiatric care provision.
It must be a very rewarding job, especially when you see people who have progress through Headley Court and the personnel recovery centres. Do you often see them afterwards and catch up with them?
We had a fantastic day just last week, actually, where we decided to hold a party, which we called a celebration of life, and we invited back all of our ex-patients. And what is particularly clear to me is that the military staff at this hospital, who consistently go above and beyond the call of duty, we tend to see our patients and their families at their lowest ebb. My staff will always say to me, sir, looking after military patients is not the same as looking after civilian patients. We bond so much more with them. And that comes at a psychological cost. So what I wanted to do was to get the ex-patients back so that the staff could have the ability to see them having moved on and to see them in happier times. And we had a fantastic day last week where 150 ex-patients came back. We had a free bar, free food, a fun fair for their families, and we hung one on. And for me, it was a particular delight. Most of these young men, we only ever see either laid flat on a bed or in a wheelchair as they leave. And what was tremendously rewarding was to see them up on their legs, even if they were artificial legs, but see them up on their legs and walking around. So yeah, some real rewards there.
I was going to ask you, what the most important part of the patient pathway was. I think over the last few months, what I've realised, it's not the nine liner, it's not the procedures, it's not even medical advancements, it's the people, isn't it?
Absolutely, it's the people. And it's that it's military people looking after military casualties. It's really clear to me that our patients do best when they're nursed amongst their military colleagues and when they're nursed and looked after by military nurses and doctors. How we ever forgot that when we closed military hospitals escapes me, but it's really clear to me now that we've recaptured the ability to do that. And it's not only getting the soldiers together or the servicemen together, but a mum and dad whose son has just lost a leg will only really be able to understand what's going through the minds of a similar family. And those families, again, bond really closely. And so whilst we put the patients together, putting their families together, accommodating them together and allowing them to mutually support each other is really important. So your point is right. It's all about people. But the caveat I would put on it is it's about having military people looking after our casualties and their families in a military way and holding them together.
With the end of Operation Herrick in sight, the hospital at Camp Bastion will be closing its doors as the British forces leave Afghanistan. The countless lives that have been saved by the dedication of everyone involved in the patient pathway is the legacy that the Role 3 Hospital will leave behind in the desert. But as the operation draws to a close, it's the people who have really made the difference. I asked Corporal Cornwell from Camp Bastion's emergency department for her lasting impression of her time here.
Just be able to look after guys that are, you know, out on the ground, you know, laying their life on the line. So that's really rewarding to be able to give something back to them if they need it.